wonder what your bestest, most wonderfulest, wildest dream would be. It's good English. Have they ever come true? The other day, I met somebody, a professional person, who put an entry into one of those home car lottery things and won the car. Have you ever? True. It's true. It does happen. I know someone else who put in one of those 25 words or less entrant things and won a fully paid holiday down the Rhine. Yeah, I know. I put in for an entrance when I was a student at Bible college. I put in for an entrance to win a year's supply of toilet paper. Well, this is really important for a student, isn't it? And I forgot all about it. And then some months later, a big package arrived in the post. And it was a big dog. I want a big stuffed dog. I'd rather the toilet paper would have been much better, but there you go. I wonder, though, if your deepest, most satisfying dream, longing would be more about relational stuff, connecting with people relationally. Certainly, I would love to have a chat, a couple hours chat with both sets of my grandparents. Now I'm an adult. It'd be a really different conversation, wouldn't it? Other people in history that I'd love to have a chat with. I'd love to ask Jesus a few things. And some of the stuff that's written there would be really helpful. But what about you? Would you, you know, I wonder if your deepest longing, wildest wanting is to restore a relationship that's been broken or to say something to somebody who's no longer here amongst us. Exactly what happened to the disciples after the death of Jesus. 3 days later, he wasn't dead. He was back alive again. Amazing, isn't it? Reversal of a past circumstance. They'd seen him dead, and here he is yet alive again. So today, here we are. We're talking about the resurrection of Jesus and the ongoing effects for the church as to what that meant for them. And we are here at this point, the second last, the penultimate in our series on the story. Who's been reading the story? Has anybody been reading it? Good stuff. Who's read all the way through the story? Wow. Michelle Guy, have you read all the way through it? Well done. Oh, there's a few others too at the back here. A few others have read all the way through it, so well done. Congratulations, that's fantastic. Keep reading if you started. And if you like the Davies family, you sort of stuck well back in the Old Testament. Don't give up. Keep going, keep reading it. It's a story worth reading. The story in itself is a put-together, readable form of the Bible. And it helps you get a good grasp of what's going over the whole Scriptures. And in the future, not too distant future, I want to talk to you on a couple of series about how we understand the Bible, how we interpret the Bible for our modern day and age. There seems to be a lot of confusion about how we read it and how we really take our morality from it. So I want to unpack that a little bit too. A little bit later, coming up in September, I want to do a series which I'm calling Resident Aliens, which is a series not about alien invasion, but about us living here with a different purpose. So I'm basing that from 1 Peter. Then in October, you ready for this one? I'm going to do a series, a two-week series. I'm going to ask the band to help me with this one. A two-week series I'm calling Rocktober. Okay? So we're going to take some contemporary songs. I'm going to see where's the gospel in these songs. See if we can find the gospel in some contemporary music. Promise not to do any Metallica for you. Did I say that out loud? Maybe not. This is a good series for you to bring along those people who are wondering about faith and are wondering if the message of the gospel has anything to say to this day and age. We're also nearing the end of our 40 days of prayer, and we've been doing 40 days of prayer particularly in response to the assembly's decision, the Nine Church Assembly decision around same-sex marriage. And I'm encouraging people to pray and to fast. Please continue to do so. We met the other night as an eldership, and we had a long discussion around this. The elders want to end this period of prayer with a corporate time of prayer together. And so Thursday the 23rd of August, here, 7:30, we want to meet to pray, to pray together, to signify the ending of that time by us being here in corporate prayer. At the end of that prayer time, also, there will be an opportunity, and it'll be opportunity in small groups to have a group discussion around same-sex marriage or same-gender marriage for those that want to. No have to, it's just for those who want to. The elders will facilitate this. And as part of that, in due course, there'll be a short survey that's emailed out with an opportunity to let the eldership and myself know is if there's been anything that you have heard in this 40 days of prayer that will be helpful for us to know about. Anything that you've heard from the Lord or from the Spirit that would be helpful for the eldership or myself to know about. So I encourage you to keep on praying and to keep trusting, as God is Lord of his church and he does speak to his church, and we need his direction at this particular time. The disciples were pretty shocked to learn that their friend and their teacher, whom they'd followed for 3 years, whom they'd heard and they'd done life with, and whom they'd seen killed, all of a sudden was alive. I couldn't believe it. Here was this one they thought was dead is now walking amongst them. And what's more, in deep conversation, still teaching his disciples and appearing to many others as well. And so Jesus continues to teach and despise disciples, and he gets them to realize, gradually understand that his ministry is now finished, but they are to continue on where he left off. And most importantly, and that they are to wait for the gift of the Spirit to be empowered to do this. So Jesus departs from heaven, but before he does so, he gives the disciples a task. And here it is from Matthew's account of the life of Jesus, chapter 28, right at the very end of Matthew's gospel. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And surely I am with you to the very end of the age." Beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful promises there for us if we obey Jesus' commands. And then it was repeated again as Seb read out to us the reading from the beginning of Acts, which is basically the end of Luke's gospel. And you heard it again in another form, Jesus' command to his disciples. And so in obedience, the disciples were gathered in a small place. All of a sudden, the sound like that of a violent wind came amongst them. Little tongues of flame, little bits of flame fell on top of every one of them, and they were empowered with various gifts of the Spirit, and as a demonstration, were able to speak in other languages. Many others were drawn to what was going on that day, and they came to hear what was happening, and they heard for the first time the good news of Jesus, that he was lived, that he was crucified, and that he is back to life. And that has such significant meanings. Over 3,000 were gathered to the church and became believers that day. This is the day the church began and started as a movement that continues unabated right down to this very moment and will keep rolling on. The disciples, now empowered by the Spirit, were able to do wonderful things. They taught, they healed, they helped the poor, they continued on the ministry of Jesus. And they too were unpopular, just like Jesus. Peter and John in particular were targeted for a lot of persecution. They were whipped because of their belief that Jesus was the Messiah, the anointed one sent by God into the world. And even though they were imprisoned, their work continued unceasing, relentlessly, kept on going on. God's message and his message bearers would not be stopped. They chose to obey God rather than people. They were relentless for the gospel. How can I describe how relentless they were for the gospel? It's like a Crows supporter who, to remind you again and again, they won the showdown. But 1,000 times over that. We're not talking about last night either. One such man, Stephen, was chosen to be a deacon. Deacon's a really interesting word, but it essentially means someone who serves. In fact, we're all deacons, aren't we? Someone who serves. He was well known for the fullness of God's grace in him, for the power in which he could speak using the Spirit and the Spirit acting through him. And he was singled out for his beliefs, hauled before a kangaroo court by his oppressors, opponents. And Stephen, you can read about it in Acts chapter 7. He gives a good account of the history of God working through humanity and how God has moved and shaped and spoken. And then in this burst of passion, he lays at those who are accusing him an accusation of his own that they are the ones who are responsible for the death of Jesus. And of course, the abreaction came back to him very violently and he was stoned that day. This event, this single event, lights the fuse of the simmering anger that was starting to bubble up against the newly named Christians. And a great persecution broke out against them, augmented by a man named Saul. The Christians in Jerusalem scattered all over the place. And so in their scattering, they spread the good news about Jesus, that he lived, that he died, and that he rose again. And aided by the persecution and also by the network, this beautiful network of Roman roads all over the known world, they took the message of Jesus wherever they went, and little flames started to burn all over the place. This man Saul, who was there at the stoning of Stephen, became a real threat to the Christians. His blood on his hands, both in Jerusalem and then also in the places where they resettled. And the Bible tells us, let me quote it to you, he was breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. Sounds like some sort of Christian-eating dragon, doesn't it? Like you see in an apocalyptic film. But even dragons can be tamed. And he has an experience on a road where the man, the one that he was persecuting, appears in front of him and is so bright it blinds his eyes and he's left not seeing for quite a few days. Left unable to see, he's helped into the city until a Christian prays for him and he gets his sight back. And his total transformation is not complete until he has a new name. Sometime later, the Apostle Peter is praying and has a vision. In fact, the vision appears three times. It's a vision of a whole host of animals considered by those who held the Jewish faith to be ceremonially unclean. Yet Peter was instructed, take them for food to eat. Peter rejects his command, and God says to him, do not call anything impure that God has made clean. Peter can't quite work out what all this means, but he's getting a prompting from the Spirit to go with three men who were there waiting to take him somewhere else. And so Peter obeys and goes, only to find a group of Gentiles, people who was against the Jewish law to associate with, gathered, asking questions about this Jesus. And while he was there, he preached the good news, and two amazing things happened. Firstly, similar way to what he'd already experienced in the day of Pentecost when the disciples were gathered in the upper room, the same thing happens. An amazing thing happens. Peter realizes that the message of Jesus is not just for the Jews, but it's for everybody. It's for the whole world. And God was telling him, this is the news I want you to spread to the ends of the earth. So the lower view and the upper view are now starting to come into connection. The lower story is our story, our perspective, and the upper view is how God has been operating, how God sees the world. And we can now start to see the two paths merging together really clearly. We can see the results of the movement of God down through the whole of human history and down through the ages. God has been working and moving and acting to bring humanity to the point of salvation. And finally, people get it. And the church sees it. And the church begins to understand it. You know, we set this topic many, many months ago. And we penciled in this date. We actually borrowed in this date many, many months ago. How fitting it is that we talk about the work of the church, the post-resurrection work of the church, on a day when we commission a missionary church to go and do the ongoing work of the church. How good is God to organize that so far out in advance? What does this story tell us, though? What does it tell us, this narration of events throughout the early life of the church, it tells us a couple of really significant things. The first is this, that the reality of the resurrection was so real, so captivating, so powerful, so attractive, so transformational, that it was worth giving your life for. It was worth investing your life in. The narrative of the early church is not just. It is not something that has come from some weirdo mushroom-eating cult group of people. Well, this is not Jonestown 1970, not Waco, Texas, not some doomsday preppers who are setting things apart. This is from a very ordinary, even honorable group of people who are rational, who understand things and who see things plainly, and yet their lives were changed and transformed and turned upside down. They saw in Jesus something that was worth living for, and for many of them, something that was worth dying for. And importantly, they felt that this news that Jesus is risen was too good to keep to themselves. So they began to spread it everywhere they could, and they were good at spreading it. And their personal eyewitness accounts was enough to convince many other people to follow Jesus for themselves. And you know what? You are the benefactors of them sharing the good news. How good is that? That God plans redemption for humanity. And the effect of sin and the marring of this insidious virus that's running through all humanity is now broken and restored, and that you and I are redeemed, and we are made new. This is an even thing for us to recognize, that the story continues. The disciples shared it with others, who shared it with others, right down onto someone who shared it with you. You're sitting here because somebody told you this great story, the story that Jesus lived, that he died, and that he rose again, and you can have life through that. And you and I, we all get the privilege, it is a privilege, to share it with somebody else. Because if we don't share it, who does? The question comes to us, is the message that you've received about Jesus worth investing your life into? Here's the second thing. In Jesus, we have a whole new start. And that's what disciples twig to very quickly. In Jesus, we have a whole new start. In Jesus, we find the new beginning that we long for, that deep aching that we have. We find it resolved in the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus. The message that Jesus brought was not just for your head so you can think differently, but it's for your heart so you can live differently. It was to completely restore the relationship that we have with God so that we could approach him with absolute confidence. Everything is new and done over. It's not a renovation. It is complete make new. You see, Jesus meets the deepest longings that you could have. The longing to be truly known for who you are. The longing to be loved unconditionally and loved apart from what you can do and what you can offer. The longing to be part of more than what you are at the moment. That is the longing to be significant. You know, he meets that longing that we have, you know, that the longing of sadness. I got a sense in this. So I walked into this service and I went, there is somebody here this morning who is deeply saddened. And the resurrection tells us that even death is not strong enough to stop the work of God. You know, in your sadness, God says, it's okay. I've proved it. I love you. I know you. I want to heal you. These longings in us are salient reminders of what life was like when we have sin in us. And it's a reminder of what it is when we don't have sin in us. And we see this when the disciples are spread out, energized with the message of Jesus. They were telling the world they'd found the answers for their deepest questions. They were realized. The disciples had this experience indeed at that first moment when they saw Jesus. They came before him. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Peter? Can you imagine the rest of them having run away? Can you imagine all the shame and the guilt when Jesus first appears amongst you? This moment of startling, my goodness me, he's alive, and then what have I done? All that which they didn't want to be reminded of from those moments around the crucifixion were taken away. And it's been replaced by a sense of peace. Not just the absence of conflict, but the sense that everything is good and right with the world. Connection again with God. In Jesus, we have a brand new start. The full reset button is pressed, and we become back to where we were in the Garden of Eden. It's significant that the main adversary against the new Christians is a man called Saul, who, when he has an experience with Jesus, gets a new name called Paul. It's what happens to a person when they come to know Jesus. It changes everything. Third thing, we have the gift of the Spirit now to fulfill the Great Commission. I don't know what your experience or your thoughts on the Spirit are, but plain reading in the text on the life of the early church tells me that engaging with the Spirit is a non-negotiable when it comes to being partnership with Jesus. If you read the post-resurrection experience of the early church, you can see over and over again the involvement of the Spirit. The Spirit brings to us the mind of Jesus, the giftings of Jesus, so that we continue the work of Jesus. The disciples had the experience with the risen Jesus for sure. They also had a whole new start, of course, but they had the giftings of the Spirit to enable them to see what God has done and what God is continuing to do. So here's the thing. The same gift that was in operation in the early church is in you. Let me give you this example. I had a really strange experience yesterday. Nothing football related. We've got lots of chickens in our backyard. And we've got a rooster. And I really wanted to bring a photo of our rooster, but he looked a bit like a drowned rat yesterday. He's a little frizzle bantam. And a beautiful looking bird. And he knows it too. And he every time I speak or my son speaks, there's something about a male voice. He'll cry all the time. But anyway, yesterday I knew he'd been a really placid rooster up until this point, because roosters can be pretty aggressive. But he'd been pretty placid, except the last couple of weeks he'd been attacking the kids, and he's there on the clothesline or whatever, and he comes up and sort of has a bit of a go at them. Never done it to me, but yesterday first time he, while my back was turned, mind you. He had a go at the back of my leg. And I knew that the other kids had said that, you know, he'd done this before, and so I just got a bit of a, nothing too hard. Like, just a little, good on you, sort of, you know. And a few minutes later, he comes back and he has another go. This is a bit more of a vicious go. Good thing I had jeans on. And now, I don't think he's going to lay eggs anymore for a long time now. He's still alive, and I reminded him who was the boss, and I'm looking down this rooster, like, he'd be lucky to be a kilo wringing wet. I'm like, you want to pick on somebody 101% bigger than you? Like, seriously? How often are we like that rooster? You know, we have the history of God's work with his people. History of salvation. And how often do we remain in a very small view? about what God is doing in the world and about what the reality of the world is all about. That rooster, he reckons he rules the roost in the backyard. He hasn't learned the agenda, what's going on here. I'm the alpha male in the backyard. This is my backyard, not his backyard. How often are we like that? We don't see what God is doing, and yet we've got this understanding. And you know, we've covered the story, albeit very fast. We've covered the story over these last few weeks, and we've seen where God has been working over and over and over again. And yet we remain in this little narrow view, this low down view. And God calls us, see what I'm doing. Provided with the tools, I've given you the Spirit. You live in the light of the resurrection. You are the resurrection people. Act like it. Get out of the backyard and be much more what God has created you to be. Let me lead you in prayer. Wow, God, the most wonderful thing has happened. Your son Jesus is not dead, but he is alive. And we know because of that, everything has changed and our life has changed as well. Forgive us for seeing the resurrection so small and so narrow. Help us to see beyond ourselves and see the opportunities you place before us for the task that you have given to us as your church. May we walk into it. May we be truly the resurrection people who live our life in light of the great things you've done. In your name we pray. Amen.